Reverend Lucia, live from our national studios here in Accra, and as usual, I'll be picking your comments on 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And to our first item, call it the eighth wonder of the world, and you may not be far from right. 1,020 grams of cocaine in the custody of the police, turning into a different substance altogether. This is exactly what happened in an Accra Circuit Court when the narcotic, which has been in police custody, was brought to the court to be used as an exhibit against an accused person. Nanama Martin, the accused, was arrested in 2008 for allegedly trafficking more than 1,000 grams of cocaine. When the case was called, the exhibit turned out to be sodium bicarbonate. This development has caused a stir within the police, government and judicial circles. Is there something to the issue that meets the eye? DSP Kofia J. Twadra is the head of the Police Narcotics Unit and is joining us on the line as we look at the issue. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Can you give us a brief about the case before we even go to the issues revolving around the cocaine or the substance that should have been cocaine?
The lady, Nanama Martin, was arrested sometime in August 2008 and handed over to the narcotics unit of the CID headquarters for investigations. Now, at that time, she was arraigned before court, Circuit Court 1, the Cocoa Affairs Court, while the exhibit, which was seized from her during the arrest, was carefully parceled, sealed, and forwarded to the police forensic lab for examination. We received a report from the lab certifying the cocaine as 1,020 grams of cocaine positive, certifying the exhibit as positive for cocaine with a total weight of 1,020 grams. The case went through several adjournments, and then, and after about a year in custody, her counsel applied for bail at the High Court, and this application was granted, even though that is a non-bailable offense. She was therefore bailed sometime in 2009. She then jumped bail and then escaped to the U.S. Sometime in 2010, we extricated a bond on the surety. That is, we took the surety to task to produce the suspect. The surety then lures the suspect from U.S. into Ghana and handed her over to us in July this year. We quickly preferred a fresh charge against her and then arraigned her before Circuit Court 1. Now, the trial went on through several adjournments till it came to the time that our investigator in the case had to give evidence. And the investigator giving evidence means that he has to tender all exhibits that came into his custody during the investigation. Exhibits include statements, documents, or anything that will go to substantiate our allegation that she was in possession of drugs. And this also includes the substance that we seized from her, which was certified as cocaine. So after tendering all exhibits, it came to the time of tendering the cocaine. Now, when we seize exhibit, there is a procedure we call chain of custody regulations. We ought to make sure that what we seize from somebody is sealed in the presence of that person. And by sealing, I mean it's checked in his presence. It is shown to that person that this is what the police found with you. And we then package it either in an envelope or a card box or whatever. And then we melt sealing wax pour it on all the edges, and then we use a police official seal, which is under lock and key, in stamping the melted wax, which are on the edges. In fact, after that, the suspect is made to initial the edges of the envelope. This is to ensure that in the suspect's absence, no police officer would be able to break the seals. Because if a suspect initials the edges and that person is not available, then if you break, how do you get a signature on it again? We then, in this condition, forward the exhibit to the laboratory for examination. At the laboratory, the exhibit is received by the analyst. The exhibit is forwarded to the laboratory by a letter. In that letter, there's a description of the package. And that letter is signed by the Director General CID. Now, what the analyst does is, on receipt of the exhibit and then the forwarding letter, he has to ensure that the description of the exhibit is the same, in the letter is the same as the exhibit that has been handed over to him. Aside of that, he also has to ensure that all the seals on the exhibit bear the CID headquarters official stamp and they are intact. That is the only case where the analyst would accept the exhibit. If the exhibit is not in that condition, if any of the seals is found broken, the analyst will not accept the exhibit. So in this Nanama case, we forwarded the exhibit sealed with the CID headquarters seals. The analyst received it, broke our seals open, removed the exhibit from the package, weighed it to know the total weight, and then took samples for analysis. The sample the analyst will keep for himself to be used for analysis later on, and then the bulk of the exhibit is then resealed in the presence of the investigator. Then now the analyst will then melt sealing wax and place it on all the CID headquarters sealing wax that came with the exhibit. He then uses either the Ghana Forensic Science Lab stamp or the Police Forensic Science Lab seal or the Ghana Standards Board seal in stamping the exhibit. So now the exhibit does not bear CID headquarters stamps. It bears either police forensic stamps or the Ghana Standard Board stamps. Mm-hmm. In this condition, the exhibit is then returned to the investigator who then bring it for safekeeping at the unit. There is no way somebody from now onwards can break that exhibit, because if you break it, how are you going to get the Forensic Science Lab seals or the Ghana Standard Board seals to stamp it? It's not possible. This measure has been put in place to ensure that exhibits are always safe. Now, the exhibit is kept in this condition in the exhibit store until the time comes that we have to tender it in evidence, and it is tendered by the investigator.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, the exhibit was examined, brought back to the unit, stored in the exhibit store, and on the 27th of September, the time came for the investigator in the case to give evidence, tender all exhibits. This he did. He took the exhibit to the court. The court, what the court does is they have to inspect the exhibit and be sure that all the lab seals are there. If the lab seals are not there, if any of them is broken, there should be an objection. Either the court or the defense should raise an objection. And so on that day, the exhibit was shown to the court. All the seals were intact, and so there was no objection. Later on, it was shown to the defense. They looked at it. Everything was intact, so no objection was raised. Now, led by the state attorney, the investigator then informs the court that he wants to tender the exhibit, which the court allowed. The exhibit, the judge then ordered the investigator to break the seals open, in open court.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, on 27th August, September, the investigator broke the seals in open court and brought out the cocaine and showed it to the whole court.
At that time, was it still the cocaine?
Pardon me?
At that time, was it still the cocaine?
It was still the cocaine. Because, look, I have just explained to you the custody rules. What we use in determining whether what was seized right from day one is still what is inside the package is the seal.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I explained that we put our CID headquarters seals and take the substance to the laboratory. When we get to the laboratory, they remove our CID headquarters seals and then they put
their seal,
their stamp on it. So after handing over back to us, there is no way we can break the seal. Mm-hmm. If you break it, how are you going to get the lab seals to put on it? You see,
yeah.
These are the seals that were inspected in court that day, and there was no problem with them, and the court raised no objection and then agreed that the exhibit should be tendered in evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, the seals were broken open, the exhibit was brought out and showed to the whole court, and surrendered to the court. That was the end of our chain of custody.
So from what you are saying, at that point, when it was surrendered, the CID had no control over it again whatsoever. Is that
no,
it?
No, no.
Yeah.
After he surrendered it to the court took custody of it. And let's note here that it was no longer sealed. The court took custody of it without any seals.
Yeah,
they kept it. We don't know where they kept it. We don't know who kept it. And the case was adjourned to the following day for the investigator to be cross-examined.
So it was after the court kept the cocaine or whatever substance. A day after that, it was discovered. There was a request by defense that they wanted a retesting.
Yes. After the cocaine we handed over to the court had been kept overnight, the next day when we went to court, surprisingly, we went to court expecting that the investigator will be cross-examined. And then the defense counsel comes and says that now they don't believe that the substance we tendered the previous day was cocaine. And so they were making an application to the court to order that the substance should be retested.
But initially, there wasn't any claim at all for a retesting when it was intended.
In fact, we are saying that if they genuinely believed that the substance was not cocaine on the day it was being tendered in evidence, they should have objected to it. So that the judge would then say that, oh, okay, police, you have just brought this thing. The defense is saying they don't believe that it is drug, and so please take your things back and go and test it, retest it and bring it so that we all know whether it is really cocaine or not.
Yeah.
They did not do this, and then after we had opened the exhibit and now there was no control over it and it had been kept overnight in the court. We don't know who kept, we don't know where it was kept. We went to court and then they said we should go back. They don't believe that it was cocaine and so it should be retested.
But DSP Kofi Eje Twajira, there is this other concern. Being the people prosecuting, that is, I'm talking about the police in general, was it not in your interest to ensure that wherever the court was going to keep the substance is something that mattered to you because it can make the prosecution's case useless?
No, you see, we don't have control over the court's activities. what we have, what police has control over is what I have just narrated to you.
Mm-hmm.
Up to the point, in fact, because this, let me, I have not said this yet, because this is 1 kilo cocaine, which is very expensive. On two previous occasions, the drug had been taken to court with the expectation that it would be tendered. It was not tendered. On all those occasions, I did not allow the investigator alone to take that exhibit to court. He was always under the escort of three other policemen. Three policemen were always escorting him anytime he was handling that exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we wanted to ensure that nothing happens to that exhibit. And so our work ended at where we tendered the exhibit in evidence. It was admitted into evidence, and then the court took custody of it. That was the end of our work.
Yeah, you can see why many people are asking questions, because there's been a previous occurrence where substance supposed to be cocaine also turned into something, or coconte flour or so. So many people are asking a lot of questions in relation to this. Are they related in any way? What happened?
Yes. But if you listen carefully to what I have just, the narration I have just given, this is a different scenario. This is a different scenario in the sense that we handled our exhibit according to the chain of custody rules until the time that the court ordered the investigator to break the seals open. And so it is not the same as maybe some other case that has happened previously.
Yeah. DSP Kofi Adjei-Twajara, I want to thank you very much for taking us through the process right up to this point. But what do you intend to do now, since this case has come up?
Well, investigations I've been open into the matter. The police administration has authorized the Director General CID to commence investigations. I just listened to the news, and I heard BNI will be investigating the same matter. I've also heard that the Judicial Service is going to set up an investigation team to look at the same matter. And I'm very happy because the perpetrator in this matter must be found out and brought to book.
We want to thank you very much for your time, DSP Kofi Adjei-Twajara, head of the Police Narcotics Unit. You are still on Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana on Obunu 96.5 and also on Unique 95.7. Mr. KB Kwanson is a former Executive Secretary of the Narcotics Controls Board and also former Director of the BNI. We have him joining us on the line as we try to shed more light on the handling of such issues. Good evening, sir.
Evening.
And what do you make generally of this incident, looking at the fact that we've had a previous occurrence? Hello, Mr. Kwanson. Unfortunately, we lost Mr. Kwanson on the line, but you are still live here. If you are somewhere in the two upper regions, you are on Radio Upper West and also Jura Radio Borga, together with Radio Savannah. We take a quick break. We'll be back as we try to re-establish contact with Mr. KB Kwanson. Behind the News, still live on Radio Ghana and somewhere in the Bnoafo region, you are listening on Radio BAR. As we try to re-establish contact, we have a press statement coming from the Office of the Chief Justice, and the Chief Justice has set up a high-level committee to investigate the circumstances under which 1,020 grams of cocaine exhibit tendered in evidence at an Accra Circuit Court turned into washing soda as they captured it. This follows a publication at the front page of the Daily Graphic of today and the Ghanaian Times too. In the Accra Circuit Court is said to be puzzled as to how a substance alleged to be cocaine, which was seized from an accused person, confirmed by the police to be cocaine after testing, it turned out to be sodium carbonate after another test by the Ghana Standards Authority on the orders of the court. The committee, chaired by Justice of the Court of Appeal, Mrs. Justice Agnes Doji, who hold its sittings in the Supreme Court building, and this shall be open to the general public. Other members of the committee are Justice Abdullah Idrisu, a Justice of the High Court, John Bannerman, the Chief Registrar General, with Ni Boy Kwarte, Deputy Director of Human Resource, as Secretary. We've managed to get back Mr. KB Kwanson on the line. Sorry, sir, we lost you earlier. But we are asking, do you think it can be blamed? Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Kwanson.
Yes.
Yes, thank you very much for rejoining us. Yes. We are asking, do you think, or can there be an institutional lapse in the handling of some of these things for it to occur this way?
There are always the possibilities of lapses in whatever institution. But let me address this matter in relation to a more serious scandal that engulfed this country some years ago, when 77 cocaine parcels vanished from the police exhibit store. You see, what happened to that case? Committees were established and so on. To date, nothing happened. I would have thought that if we had done a proper forensic investigation into the circumstances, we would have come by a certain procedure to determine the lapses and then plug them. To date, nothing has happened. You see, so you see in this situation a certain culture developing. If in law enforcement the culture develops that I'll go about it, if I'm caught, nothing can happen, then there's a problem. I welcome the investigation that are going to be conducted into this, you see, but I will probably have preferred a wider non-institutional machinery to look at various aspects of the problem. It isn't only the metamorphosis of the cocaine into the sodium, sodium, whatever it is. There are wider aspects that requires investigation to serve as a basis for preventing such actions in the future.
Yeah. So in this case, we have the judicial service setting one up. We have the police going into it, and we are also told that the BNI is to investigate the case. Perhaps, from what you are saying, are you thinking of a body that will come together so that they look at it broadly and not institution-wise?
Yes, preferably. You see, and from the professional standpoint, I would have preferred a body, a central body. And all these other institutions can input. You see, but I can't see how one event is being investigated by four or three bodies simultaneously. I mean, I, as a professional person, I don't see how effective it is. If there was one central body composed of various aspects and the public inputting, then we'll have a broader scope. You see, we haven't looked at the drug problem in a holistic way. We have been dealing with the symptoms of the law enforcement aspect. You see, that's why I've always regretted that the 77 parts of cocaine, which got lost, was not properly investigated, and that it was left to die. I'm sure that if we have done that, we have established a certain procedure to determine what is going wrong and so on. So my preference, I don't object to three bodies handling the same subject, you see, but from a professional point of view, I would have preferred a central body composed of various aspects and so on to look at the issue on a broader perspective. The issue is broader than merely the change of cocaine into crystals or something, from my point of view.
Yeah, you've looked at this, but let's go back a little, even before this could happen. We were told by DSP Kofi Edjie-Twadra that handling a cocaine case is not a bailable offense, and yet there was a bill which even allowed the person accused to abscond and later had to be lured back. Don't you see that thing happening from there?
Yes, I see a major problem. That is why I'm saying that we require a body to look at the whole aspect. You see, the law has been bent in some way. Practices have been compromised. You see, and I agree with you. They granted a person bail and then he fled. Then many years he came and the matter continued. You see, and it's also a worry that it should have taken 3 years to try a simple cocaine case. And that's another part of the problem. If the arrests are made and action is not expedited, it gives room for the manipulators to infiltrate the various vulnerable aspects, to influence them. So I agree with you. That's why I say there are wider issues that we should look at. This should be a basis for looking at the problem from a holistic point of view.
Say, as you mentioned this, the concern has been raised that perhaps politics is making the waters murky for even those who want to see justice done. How do you see this worrying the situation?
Well, it's unfortunate that in this country, everything is being seen in politics. But let's face it, the drug problem is a political problem. You see, to deal with the problem, the first requirement is political will. You see, that's the first thing if you're dealing with the drug problem. Political will, and that comes from the government. You see, because that political will establish the legal and institutional framework, provide the logistics and so on. So you need a political will. So if something goes wrong, it is natural. I don't see anything wrong with playing politics into it. Then number two, the effects of cocaine. See, whether it manifests in armed robberies or in money laundering or interfering with the judicial system or undermining democracy through corruption, it's a political issue, you see. So I would play down that aspect of it and go down to measures to be taken, because the effects affect everybody in the country. It's a non-political issue. It's a people's problem, you see. But you need the political will of the government to stamp this foot down to deal with the problem.
So in this case, can the police be blamed as a lot of fingers are pointing to them?
Say again.
Can the police be blamed because many people are pointing accusing fingers at that institution, even though we've had explanation that others are also involved in handling this substance?
For me, I think it's a bit of, for want of a better word, an ignorant stance to pass judgment when you don't have the facts. You see, if you're dealing with corruption, there is no aspect of our public life that is devoid of corruption. See, if you have a police service is corrupt, okay, your customs is corrupt, immigration is corrupt, then the society itself is corrupt. In any case, it isn't the police which corrupt itself. It is the people who corrupt the police. So let us look at the facts. Hey, there's bound to be malfeasance in every human institution. There's no perfection in that. But the important thing is that there should be the machinery for identifying the problem, identifying those who are involved in the malfeasance, and then having the will to deal with them scrupulously. Let me ask you this. You see, for the drug problem, if you're dealing with it, the enforcement aspect requires you do the prosecution, the punishment, and then the assets of the people are confiscated to deprive them of the benefits. How many times have we seen the property of drug people being confiscated? It doesn't happen. So there's always a problem with the enforcement.
Okay.
And that is why we should identify those problems and then deal with them. So that we don't look at just the symptoms of the disease. The disease is basic. It's more entrenched. And unless we do a critical analysis to x-ray the disease, we can't deal with the problem.
Mr. KB Kwansin, I want to thank you very much for sparing some
much
of your time this
pleasure.
Evening. Mr. KB Kwansin is a former executive secretary of the Narcotics Control Board and also former director of the BNI. But government has issued a swift statement in relation to what is happening. And we have John Akologutia, the Minister of Information, on the line to tell us much more about the statement. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, the statement has been quite swift. Can you tell us what moved government immediately to say something about the issue?
Yeah, thank you very much for this opportunity. Government takes the issue of drugs very seriously. You would recall that some few years back, government earned an internationally bad image because of the rate of drug peddling in this country. So government since 2009 has instituted very serious measures to ensure that this was reduced to the barest minimum, if not eliminated at all. So we've been following the trend, and we've been following issues concerning drug menace in the country. And this development is really very shocking and needed to be looked into seriously. Because if we just look on, then it will amount to complicity. And you know the effects or social effects of drug menace.
Yes.
That is what has moved government into taking this action, because the whole development, the whole thing surrounding the investigation, prosecution, and the subsequent acquittal of the accused, you know, leaves much to be desired.
You've mentioned that the BNI has been given 7 days to submit its report on the substance and issues around it. And we've heard from Mr. Kwanson that perhaps it would have been good to have a body, a general central one, looking at the whole issue. Don't you think perhaps you could have tasked the body together jointly to help in the process?
Yeah, he might be right, but you know, this is a court process. And you know, there's a time limit for maybe an appeal or otherwise if the state is not satisfied with what has happened. I do think that we are trying to work within that framework. But also it's good to take some preliminary steps before moving to the next step or stage. So if we get this report and there's a need for us to go into that kind of body situation that he's talking about, why not? We'll go in. Because as I indicated earlier, government is very much concerned about the drug menace in this country.
We want to thank you very much, Sir John Tiakologo, for your time.
Thank you too.
That is the Minister of Information. Behind the News, you are live on Volta Star Radio and also on Twin City and Radio Central. We'll be back after this break. Behind the News, and if you are somewhere in the Adisu West State, Kofodia, you are getting us live on Sunrise FM. Some of your tests before we move on to the next person here. This cocaine incident must be thoroughly investigated, as the president has directed. The explanation of the police officer is very excellent. Baba Musa is giving that commendation from UDS. Oh, Ghana, cocaine turning into sodium bicarbonate, God save us. No name. Mohamed Naniwa, NDC has no excuse. They used the cocaine tag against the MPP to come to power. Tanka Aka Obamsu Alavanyo VR. The policeman kept in charge of the said cocaine should be arrested and detained. And Tianwa, hi, Kingsley, NDC must be held responsible as it did to MPP. And the police should stop the talk. They are not living up to expectation. I hope you listened to the explanation as given by the DSP. We have joining us on the line now, lawyer Frimpong Manson. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Certainly, I know for people concerned about the image of a country, this is a worrying situation. What do you think?
Oh, yes, indeed. The drug menace is really a worrying situation for this country, because for a very long time, Ghana has been tagged as a real point of entry of drugs. And therefore, when issues like this come up, we really have to brace up and then look at them critically.
Mm-hmm. Are we doing so, looking at events of the past?
Well, considering the past, really the past has not been very comfortable, because investigations that were conducted, especially on the 77 parcels of cocaine that got lost. I mean, the whole thing tended to be something that up to today we are still talking about, and we have our doubts and all that. But I believe, as a nation, we should have really gone further. The way we left it really has left much to be desired by the citizenry. And as we didn't handle it very well, other issues come up, then it becomes really complicated and complex. So then I believe we have to do something positive to really get the situation done properly.
In the present situation, the accused was acquitted and discharged, and not just acquitted. Can the state reopen the case?
Well, criminal cases don't really end like that. When we find further evidence to recall, I mean, it can the person can be brought back for trial.
Yeah, but what lessons are we drawing? Looking at the fact that it's been mentioned, this is a case that one cannot be billed for, and yet the processes went ahead. Nobody even raised a finger at that point.
Yeah, that is where I believe there was a real miscarriage, because the law is clear on the issue of narcotics, that when you are found culpable in a narcotic case or incident, it is not a billable offense. So how it became billable is a matter which we have to also look at critically. And I believe when the CJ's committee is investigating the matter, I believe this will be one of the issues that they will look at critically.
Yeah. The political issues will keep coming up, and you've just heard some of the tests coming in. Even though we've tried to really look at the real processes as they exist, you've heard the political tones, some of the tests tick. How is that helping or not helping to address the concern?
To be honest with you, this country, we need a kind of introspection in terms of the way we are doing our things. Issues come up, and before we realize, people then play to the gallery in terms of politics. This is a critical issue. This issue must be looked at in its entirety, devoid of political strengths and inclinations. But here you are. You see people coming up with all this. I believe it is high time we stop this kind of thing and we get more serious about issues. Because this is a very criminal case, and it borders on our image as a nation. Why then do we now bring in these political tools? I think we have to stop. We should really give a break to this kind of thing that we do.
So
that we look at it critically as an issue that borders on the image and the integrity of our nation.
How do you see the various political divides coming together on this particular issue?
You see, from hindsight, the 77 passes that occurred during the President Kufuor's administration, and then the politics of the day was said that people said most political guns were really involved in the whole matter. Now, this also happens in the period of the NDC. And as usual, as you know, people will now want to pay their price. So they want to also get the NDC also involved in this kind of matter. And I believe this is why I'm saying that we have to be more serious as a nation. Now, we have a three-pronged approach that has been instituted. The approach from the CJ's outfit, the approach from the VP's outfit, and approved by from the police outfit. I believe with this three-pronged approach, if it should be devoid of politics, then we can really move forward as a nation. Because at the end of the day, it is a multidisciplinary approach, and it will really bring out the real matter. Because at the end of the day, all the parties that are involved will submit their positions, and then we shall get a real position as a nation. But then, it shouldn't be this kind of political strength and pulling and strength, and therefore it is not good enough as a nation.
We want to thank you very much, Mr. Stephen Frimpong-Manso, for your perspective.
Thank you very much.
He's a legal practitioner and a lecturer at the Ghana Institute of Journalism. Behind the news, you are across the world on the World Wide Web, gbcghana.com. That means there is an international twist to whatever is happening. Dr. Vladimir Ntridanso is at the University of Ghana, LESIAD, and talks about international relations in this case. We have him joining us on the line. Good evening, sir. Good evening, Dr. Ntridanso. I guess there is a little challenge on that line. We take a quick break. We'll be back. But we are getting towards the holidays. How prepared are you for disasters? Shrewd is the one that has seen the calamity and proceeded to conceal himself. That is what the scriptures say. We'll be exploring that issue later on. Yes, we have Dr. Vladimir Ntridanso now on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, we are talking about the international image. You have been assessing some of these things. How do you see it impacting on us?
Well, very, very detrimental. I mean, the first is that corruption is rife in the country, and will be looked upon also as a country which is becoming part of the narco state status, and it's not very good. Already, the situation where the narcotics trade is also becoming like the slave trade in a triangle is very worrisome. And statistics show how much passed through West Africa, Ghana as one of the entry ports, Nigeria as an entry port. And I thought we were doing well. All of a sudden, this thing blows up again in the face of reality. And I strongly suspect that we all need to dispassionately treat this thing as one of the national problems to be resolved and stop bickering about who did what and who didn't do what during whose rule and during our rule or that kind of thing. So I believe this time we should give the institutional props to deal with this canker very seriously. Because when you have such a situation, then it is known that your governance system is even compromised. A narco state like Guinea-Bissau, for example, you know, it's well known that the whole state apparatus, all institutions of the state, are propped up by those who deal in these things. So I strongly suspect that we now have to sit up.
Yeah.
It's not the first time in the country.
You're talking about sitting up, and you've mentioned the politics too. Some say because of the political bickering, sometimes the institutions, as you mentioned, are not given that level of propping that they should have to tackle the issues. What do you think is missing that they should have to be able to do their work in such a way that we won't be recording such problems?
You don't need gadgets. You don't need any serious logistics. What you need is the people you put in place. What you need is to make the institution work without political interference. But if the politicians themselves are part of the problem, then it becomes a problem. And if the politicians know that the blame game will be built around whatever they do, then they will also be the people who are bought and who buy others. I mean, if the police institution is corrupt, then I can tell you that the judiciary will be corrupt. Then I can tell you that the government itself will be corrupt, because the government officials will be laying down the line. But let me tell you, the narcotics trade is such that it is universal, it's global. It's a canker that is being tackled from various angles. And when they buy the state, it is a dangerous thing. All we need is to allow the institutions of state to be independent. When they are not independent, it becomes a problem.
Do you see that independence coming in anytime soon?
It will come when we have the correct leadership who will tackle the thing dispassionately and with loyalty. For example, I do not see why, when governments change hands, then a place like the narcotic board should change personality. I do not see why, when governments change hands, then the police setup should change. If we really want to tackle these things, then we must have this institutional autonomy in such a way that these institutions have change and continuity, in the sense that when one government changes, that institution doesn't change much. It is a continuous affair. And therefore, they will do things according to the remit given them by the Constitution, period. So when we keep on putting our own men and women in such institutions, then they will dance to the tune of those who pay them.
Well, some say this is what you get from a nascent democracy. Is that a fine excuse?
That's no excuse. That's no excuse. Democracy doesn't mean exclusivism. Democracy doesn't mean we have to belt the institutions of state under our hypnosis and at our beck and call. Democracy is rather giving institutional autonomy that all parts of the system work according to the remit that they have been given. Then the system moves organically. But if we want part of the system or parts of the system to work according to our bidding, then that brings about the bickering, that brings about loopholes within the system, and it is exploited by the bad nuts within the system.
Dr. Vladimir Ntridanso, we want to thank you very much for your input.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Ntridanso is at Lesiad, University of Ghana, and a specialist in international relations. Behind the news. Just before coming on air, we were having the commentary on the outstanding Premier League game between Asante Kotoko and Brekum Chelsea. We have joining us on the line for a quick update, Benjamin Willie Graham. Good evening, Willie Graham.
Good evening, KOK. Okay. How are you doing?
I guess the match has ended. Yes, I'm doing well.
Yeah, the game is ended. It's all joy for fans of Kumasi Asante Kotoko. At least they had their hearts in their stomach because they were looking at extending their point on the league table. And you have Accra Heart of Oak who are just trailing them gradually. And so it was one of the biggest games ever witnessed here at the Babayaro Sports Stadium. Now, what actually happened is that if you look at the two sides, they have a huge history. They've met six times, and of course, today's encounter was the seventh. So far, Kumasi Asante Kotoko have had the upper hand. They've won four times, and Brekum Chelsea have won twice, and they've already played a draw. So, fans of Kotoko were just hoping that they get a revenge. Last season, it was a back-to-back victory for Brekum Chelsea, and expectedly, the fans of Kotoko had their revenge as their marksman, that's Nathan Asamoah, were just fouled in the 84th minute and allowing Michael Kufu just slot the ball beyond the reach of goalkeeper and so as to give them the needed 3 points and a deserving victory. So that's exactly what happened here at the Babayaro Sports Stadium.
So the scores again.
Kumasi Asante Kotoko beat Brekum Chelsea by a goal to nil.
Thank you very much, Benjamin Willie Graham, and safe journey back to Accra.
Thank you, KOK.
Benjamin Willie Graham is our sports correspondent and was updating us on the outstanding Premier League game between Asante Kotoko and Brekum Chelsea. Some quick tests before we move on to the issue about disaster preparedness. Political thinker Sunyai is saying there is no way the NDC government would win the 2012 election if they fail to get to the bottom of the matter. And Edu Jemfi is saying, Kingsley, that's Africa for you, corruption. Now watches the watchman. And DK Loglutema, the defense lawyer who asked for the re-examination, must be arrested and questioned on why he demanded for the exhibit to be tested at the last hour. And Ibrahim Adamu Spanky, Gareth Timpani, the NDC always alleged that Nana Addo and the MPP are drug dealers. How come under the administration cocaine has turned to soda? Now we know they are merely sabotaging the MPP to have their way. Well, how prepared are we to handle disasters, even when celebrating? Well, as feverish preparations towards the approaching festivities continue, safety issues are coming up. How prepared are you to face any potential hazard? In an effort to raise the level of disaster preparedness, Behind the News is looking at what you need to do and how you should be prepared anytime you are entering a crowded area or getting to a place where perhaps people might need your assistance because there is one disaster or the other. And we have joining us on the line an expert who has worked in the area for some time and is also the director of IPAS Ghana, Dr. Ebu Jehuapia. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Kinsley. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Yes, Doc, we are looking at that issue because increasingly people are getting together because of entertainment programs and all. What should be the first major concern for anyone entering such a place?
I think it's important to know that getting to the festivities, people get overexcited. And with that, they compromise their own safety. I know there will be a lot of campaigns with driving and drinking and driving, using the seatbelts and all that. And I think this is what that, others are doing. I would have wished to concentrate on domestic, accidents. That, most during the festive occasions, you find people buying, some implements for their children to use, balloons and all that. Children would want to also continue to use a balloon even when it is pressed. They use the pieces to make, put something out of that. Sometimes you can easily swallow that. It might block your windpipe. These are very little things that people don't take, if people don't think it happens. But in emergency room, you find them bringing these children to the emergency room. Sometimes you might not even reach the emergency room because the windpipe is blocked. Sometimes bends at home. These are things that I think that, we're coming to such festive occasions, we need to pay attention to. Another disaster, another thing that we have to check is that nightlife might change. When we are approaching Christmas, people do extra things that they wouldn't do ordinarily. And the nightlife might change. When nightlife changes, ladies are normally the victims because men who use, abuse, and dump women will be at it again. These women might get pregnant, might get infections, might get all sorts of things. So I think it's a caution and it's a right program that these people will be very careful in what they do, you know, during this festive season. If you had a little more time, I would have gone to the accident. But I believe that the accident, you have institutions in place who are campaigning so that people will drive well, not drink and drive. And, you know, so these are some of the basic things that I think we need to, as you started, we need to continue, you know, advocating that people should watch out for these little things that otherwise would cause the life of their dear ones.
Yeah. We are trying to establish contact with Dr. Zakaria of the National Ambulance Service. We've not been able to do so.
Right.
We've alerted him earlier. So if you can touch a little bit on it, handling accident victims.
It's exciting that Ghana has put in place an ambulance system. The ambulance leader too was carrying dead bodies. But this time we put up an ambulance, National Ambulance Service. That will, if you get in touch with the National Ambulance Service, they will be at your, they'll be able to reach you and reach the hospital. They've also improved the emergency care in the hospital. So at least the way you've been received in the hospital has been improved. It's not only carrying the patients to the accident center. You need to be received well, so that it don't become a casualty as you get to the hospital. So I think it's exciting Ghana has this. Let's make use of that, and let's make sure that such accident victims are given good care. Also, let me ask quickly, since you brought this one up, people would want to rush to accident scenes when they're accident. They wouldn't even use gloves when they're trying to help patients with blood oozing. You may end up being a casualty yourself. So I think it's important that you slow a little bit. We try to pay attention to, and so that we don't become casualties ourselves. If you don't have, not everybody has a mobile phone. At least when you have an accident scene and you cannot help, you can call the police. You can call the ambulance service and they'll be ready to help.
Yeah.
They'll be so trained that they can even resuscitate the casualties in the ambulances before they get to the hospital.
Okay, that is good. Perhaps we'll look at the crowded areas since it will take some time on it. But for now, I want to thank you very much. I get a signal that we've been able to get Dr. Ahmed Zakaria on the line.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ebo Jehoapia, Director, IPAS Ghana, and also an expert in handling emergency situations. But Dr. Ahmed Zakaria is head of the National Ambulance Service. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
And thank you for your time. Yes, we are looking at the preparedness of the National Ambulance Service, especially around the festive periods. What exactly have you put in place?
You know the problem about the ambulance service, and for that matter, any emergency medical service system, is that because you deal with emergencies on a daily basis, there is nothing like a special event, because at every time, your readiness should be the same, be it a normal day or during festivities. And therefore, on our part, nothing really has changed, because whatever we've been doing to respond to emergencies is normally the same. However, the difference though will be that during the festivities, the workload increases in terms of the patronage. But in terms of our preparedness, the way we function, it's said that we are strategically located, and like it was mentioned, our emergency number is 193. So in the event of any emergency, the call normally goes to our dispatch center. And then we are using the system of dispatch where we have the personnel at the control who will receive the call. And then they will interrogate you, and depending on how serious the case is, they dispatch the emergency. Now, if you observe, the response time will vary from region to region, and it will also depend on availability of the vehicles at that point in time. We have trained paramedics, or for that matter, emergency medical technicians, and they are the ones who provide the emergency care. The difference between our outfit and that of the commercial vehicles is that in the case of the ambulance service, you get on-scene care and you also get care in transit to the hospital. And if there is a need for any oxygen therapy, that is also provided. And so basically, as far as we are concerned, we try as much as possible to provide the best of pre-hospital emergency care, albeit the challenges.
Yeah. Dr. Zakaria, it's been noted that there are some accident-prone areas, and some are saying that people around such areas should be even trained so that in an emergency, they know precisely what to do before the ambulance gets there. Are you thinking of, about such things?
Generally speaking, it is not only the accident-prone areas. As a country, we need to have a well-organized, certified first responder system. What certified first responder system means is that you train people in the community who invariably will always be the first responders to emergencies. And so we kind of trying to institute that system whereby everybody in the country in future will benefit from some form of basic first aid. As you may recall, in many of these developed countries, the reason why the casualty levels are normally minimal is the fact that everybody on the street is taught some level of basic first aid.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first to arrive on the scene is attack or initiate the basic first aid while the emergency medical service personnel arrive. So as a country, these are issues that we also begin or we need to begin to look at and therefore get a system in place whereby, be it a commercial driver, be it a person in the community, has some basic first aid training, who then will be the first to initiate any of this system before the emergency medical service personnel arrives. Now, because we don't have the system, we need to pilot it and test it, be it either in the schools or with the commercial drivers, or at least identify a group that you kind of start with and then later scale it up to cover the other categories of people.
Right. Dr. Ahmed Zakaria, certainly we'll be talking again to alert people on what they need to do around this time especially. And we want to thank you so much for your time.
You're most welcome, sir.
Dr. Zakaria is head of the National Ambulance Service. Behind the news, this is where we wrap it all up for today. At the controls of Enoch Walker, production crew Christopher Sirubaitagama, Edmund Tete, Ibrahim Asari, and John Pobi, and our summarizer was Sally Bosman. My name is Kingsley Adinchere.